Another week with David Eichold on the KF Press Review Show. No cause for concern on the big plays for the defense. Why should we feel confident that those big plays will be fixed? We'll answer that question. Also, last week we speculated, is Jazz the odd man out? And now moving into this Minnesota game, he could be in line for bigger reps. We'll talk about that. Plus, how much action will Brendan Sullivan get? All of this and more. Let's have a day. Let's go. That's not an energy drink. That's a 10% IPA that David just cracked. It's 9:58 on a Wednesday morning. I'm kidding. What actually is that?
It's a double shot espresso, dude.
Oh, wow.
Usually it's why shotgun before every game.
Before every game, huh?
Yeah, about 6:30, 7 a.m. every Iowa game day.
Okay, so on the morning of every game.
Yeah. I don't do it in the press box. That might be next level, though.
You're not, you know, Drew Stevens is taking his steps back on the kickoff, and you're like, all right.
Just do it on the sidelines before, like, something big happens.
Just jittery. Can't even type during the game. David joins us again this week on the KF Press Review Show, which I think today is going to turn into a little bit of a post-game presser, which I probably should have been doing anyway, because the post-game kind of bleeds into the Tuesday media the following week. And there was a couple things that Coach Ferentz said in the post game that I want to get to. Probably most notably, David, was he was straight up like, yeah, that was me before halftime. Like we were not going to drive 75 yards. What did you think about that?
I like they owned up to it, because I think that was a real opportunity for Lester to kind of catch some unnecessary heat. But as far as Iowa making that decision,
you don't like the decision.
No, again, you've been on the team, so I'm curious what you thought about it too. Okay. I thought it showed a lack of confidence in Cade and the 1 to 2 minute passing offense. I thought there was one timeout, you're down. Troy's secondary is not good. With all due respect to them, like, they're just not a good football team at this point. And if you can't trust your sixth-year quarterback to go at least get yourself into field goal range with a minute left and a timeout, what do you think they're going to do against Big Ten-level secondaries that are good?
Good analysis. I like it. First off, just on him coming out and saying that it was him, I think that a lot of the ways that KF answers questions, I think this show has been sort of fun for me, because I'm not just taking in the substance of the answer. Like, we're going to talk about the decision here after I get done with this first piece, but I'm actually analyzing Coach Ferentz on a way that I've never done before, which is how does he let in on stuff? I'm obviously coming from this bias of 100% of my trust and buy-in was with Coach, still is with Coach. I'm very, very rarely going to question him on things that I necessarily see as decisions that he has more knowledge, experience, thought on than I do. Not to say that I wouldn't question him on certain things or certain things that happened with the program, but I think that the general public has this idea that because Iowa has been traditionally a little bit more closed doors when it comes to media policy, for a long time the freshmen couldn't talk, for, you know, they didn't have Twitter until 2018 or 19 or whatever. Even when they do come to the media sessions, it's very like what we would say coach speak or player speak, and more so than another program maybe. And I think that general philosophy sometimes gives the idea that, like, Coach Ferentz is holding stuff back or trying to, like you said, it could have been a spot where Lester could have taken heat. And to me, he's never really hiding anything. He's just trying to not make things, you know, in the media, people make things more than they are. if they get a little bit of a nibble on a quote or something that would make some noise. So on this specific instance, I just think it's a really good example of how, like, he will take responsibility if something is, like, pretty, you know, vanilla, and he's just asked a straight up question. And
yeah,
I'm not surprised at all. And it's also a big topic on, is this KF's offense? Does he call plays? We talked about this on last week's podcast, the main episode. And I told people, I'm like, this is quite literally the most game day control that he will generally have. It's like, okay, we're in a situation. Here's how aggressive or non-aggressive we want to be in a situation. That's about as far as it goes. There's an offensive coordinator that has a job to call plays for a reason. And that's what Tim Lester does. Go ahead.
There's two things, though, too, I think people really need to take into account when it comes to this, at least as far as from a fan perspective. Here's what they need to realize. I believe it's Tim Lester's offense.
Yeah.
Wholeheartedly. I believe this is his offense. You can tell it by the running scheme, but I also think they're limiting the passing playbook right now because they realize Kay doesn't have the arm to push the ball vertically as much as maybe Tim Lester would like. Yeah. And that's fine. He's adjusting the playbook to what his team's strengths are. But just because you're an offensive coordinator does not mean you have the final say in certain situations. He is always going to run it by Kirk Ferentz. Kirk Ferentz is the one who makes those calls with a minute left. Okay, what returner are we going to send out there? He works alongside the coordinators, but it is Kirk Ferentz's final call. With that being said, I believe if Tim Lester is not on staff, Brendan Sullivan does not get in those goal line situations. But you need to give KF credit because that's more than we've seen him do in years.
Yeah, and Sullivan's going to come up in a few bullet points here because that's a fun topic for this week. Anyway, going back to the pre-half decision, I think where the criticism lies in this for me is the more macro view of, can we just get a goddamn quarterback that can throw it 25 yards? Like, can we develop a quarterback or find somebody that is capable of doing what you need them to do in a 90-second offense, a little two-minute end-of-half situation? If Cade isn't capable of that, and to be honest, you know, great stat line, but it's not like, I think our yards per attempt is something like 7 or 8 yards, right? This isn't Ole Miss or Tennessee.
Let me pull up the stats, but it was something around that. Yeah.
The knock on Cade this past week, or the, you know, he's like, okay, yeah, he's doing okay, but like, we're not really testing him. He hasn't done anything hard yet per se relative to a Division I quarterback.
Yeah.
And we're going to need to, or at least have the ability to do it every once in a while if this offense wants to stay averaging 420 yards in league play. Totally understood. Totally makes sense. But if it's the case that he can't do it or he's not very good at doing it, then Kirk absolutely made the right call. Not only that, but in-game situation specific, hey, we're two quarters in almost. We're almost to halftime against Troy on this day, in this game, in this moment, and we have not been very good on offense. We're 70 yards away. I don't know. There is a chance that you try and do something stupid and you throw a pick and something happens. Now, I don't think the odds of that are as great, but try and go get a field goal. You need.
Yeah.
Where were they? The 25? Were they?
They were, I believe so. Let me double check.
Let's just say they're 75 yards away from the end zone. They're right on the 25 yard line.
They were, because they ran the two plays and got 13 yards. So, I mean, they got up to the 38 yard line.
Okay. You need to get to the opposing 35 to feel comfortable on a field goal attempt. That's a 53 yarder. Stevens has a 53 yarder. I've actually been really impressed. I wish being the former long snapper, I wish we kicked twice as many field goals, three times as many field goals as we do. Because if you watch some of Stevens' kicks, and I know he struggled at the end last year, he's putting through 40-ish yarders, the couple 40-yarders that he's had. It's still going up when it hits the net. I mean,
he's got the capability to hit 60-yarder. I'm not even over exaggerating.
He absolutely
has a cannon of a leg.
He absolutely has 60 yards in him. So I wish we took more chances in the low 50s, which would require you getting to the opposite 35, which means you need to get 40 yards. You should be able to get 40 yards in a little over a minute. even if your quarterback can't, I mean, you've got time for 3 or 4 or 5 plays. That's eight. That's, there you go. That's your 8 yards per play. And it, you could even run, you could even, like, if you spread them out for a couple plays and now they're in, now their defense starts to sag off and they kind of open it up, you could even run like a little, you know, a little screen to the running back, throw it to Caleb Johnson or give it to him on a delay.
Yep.
And, you know, have him run towards the sideline and get 5 or 8 running the ball. So I agree. You should be able to do that. I also see it, and I know this is me, KF apologist. I see it as a trust in the defense and the team at large to get it together in the second half too. It's a, okay, you know what? We played our cards here. We're a half into this game. Not going well. I trust that in a full 60 minutes, this team will figure it out. We're getting the ball at halftime. Let's reset. We'll go then. And I know that, also, I know that's less aggressive than people want it to be, but KF, as we know, is just a less aggressive coach. So you're going to get what you're going to get.
So let me backtrack a little bit. And again, I'm not trying to overanalyze.
No, go for it.
One fall camp, right? That one fall practice we saw. Kirk Ferentz and Tim Lester saw every single snap of fall camp. Mm-hmm. So, but I can only go based on what I saw. They had a two-minute drill portion in that. Brendan Sullivan, who, again, I, for my 2 cents, was – heads and shoulders a much better quarterback during that one open practice we saw. Again, not necessarily the biggest compliment to him because Cade had an awful day.
Right.
But Sullivan was phenomenal in the 2 minute drill. Tyler, I mean, he led them down for a touchdown in 2 minute drill. He went 5 of 6 throwing the football, made good decisions, and that was hands down the best quarterback play of the day. So Sullivan, if you talk about a one to, you know, screw the 2 minutes. Let's go on 60 to 90 seconds, right?
Sure.
You have a quarterback that's at least capable of getting the ball there. And if you look at Brendan Sullivan's highlights and you look at the velocity, you look at the arm strength and you compare that to Cade's healthy highlights at Michigan, Sullivan, for my 2 cents, has the higher upside when it comes to his arm. And his completion percentage backs that up as well. So it's a difficult spot to throw in a new quarterback when you're not warmed up. I'm not suggesting to throw in Sullivan in that situation. But you have a quarterback on the roster who, again, from my eye test that I got to see in the very limited time, he got the job done.
He also provides, like, if he has to, if there's nothing there, he could actually escape and gain yards with his feet, probably better than Cade can. So that adds another element to like a 2 minute offense. And we'll just talk about Brendan now. It, like you said, not sure we would see Brendan Sullivan if it wasn't for Tim Lester being on the staff. KF was asked, have you considered, I think it was one of the first questions, have you considered, you know, working in Brendan on 3rd or 4th and short in between the 20s, not just down in the red zone, but in between the 20s. And KF kind of was like, we haven't given it much thought up until this point. Like that's bullshit. First of all, KF has given it thought. I guarantee Lester would like to get work that in. And I think we actually will see it. I think that we're going to see a little bit of the switch up. I can't remember who it was. Did we play that? Was I on the team still? At some point, it might have been Michigan at one point or Minnesota was working like 3 quarterbacks at a time.
I think it was Minnesota. They were going through that weird quarterback controversy. They played like 2 or 3 different quarterbacks. The 3rd quarterback, I think, came in an emergency, but they were working the 2 quarterbacks like every other drive or something.
It was a few years back and it was working. And it was working. And it's like, it's not traditional. It's not probably what you want to do. But hey, if you got a couple guys that can be serviceable in different parts of the game, like, you're going to use them. And KF even said that in the press conference. He's like, if these guys can help us best win a football game, we're going to use them that way. And I believe that. I think that's true. It was great to see Brendan Sullivan in the red zone. Both times it worked. The first time,
see what happens. He hand the ball off to Caleb Johnson inside the 5 yard line.
You or me probably could have just given it to him. Although I don't think that you or me would have provided a quarter or a half second of thought of, oh, these guys might run the ball. Whereas Brendan does.
No, so
it's a mental, it's a mental thing of like, oh, Brendan's in the game. Shotgun snap. What's he going to do with it? That half second of hesitation, other than just crashing down on a guaranteed run, then opens up the ability for the game of inches, David. Game of inches.
Yeah, no, I mean, going back to that, though, I mean, I made a jab just because Caleb Johnson, I said if they give the ball inside the five-yard line to Caleb Johnson four times against Iowa State and they don't put Dom Orange against, you know, Johnny Pascuzzi, Iowa scores. Yeah. But you're right. I mean, I asked Mason Richmond after the game. I asked a couple other players. They said, hey, this is not a slight to Cade. I'm just curious when Brendan Sullivan's in there, kind of what different things does he provide? Not that Cade doesn't provide anything, because he does. Right. But how does Brendan sort of change things up? And Richmond just said, I think it's just a psyche of having another quarterback in there because teams aren't prepared for that. And I thought that was – some people saw that as a cop-out answer. I thought that was 100% legitimate because especially knowing Iowa and they have a running quarterback now. And, again, this is my overanalyzation of the game tape. Tyler, I mean, he's just a different athlete than Iowa's had at quarterback since Nate Stanley. I mean, he's got just a different level to him that you can tell there's something – about him. I mean, on that 1 yard pass to Ostrenga, 2 yard pass, he could have ran it in.
I thought he was going to run
a passing touchdown. I did too. That's when that was almost dangerous to flip because Ostrenga turned around to look for a block that's dropped. Then you're thinking, holy shit, Iowa has to kick a field goal or go for it.
Because that was super. Yeah, that was super unselfish of him and kind of a surprise. I was like, hey, dude, just run it in, grab it yourself. but I think that's a very legitimate answer for Richmond. I think.
Yeah.
Think about it. You're playing Iowa. You know the. Their general sway to the side of being stubborn and not wanting to put in a quarterback, not even having quarterbacks that are really dual threats over the past however many years anyway. Now all of a sudden they throw this guy in as a defender before the ball is ever snapped. In your mind, you're thinking, okay, they threw in a different guy here. They put him in for a reason. That's a half second and that's all you need. And I will give credit to the offensive line. They blocked great on that play, too. Like, they might have been able to just run that play with Cade. And if you get that same blocking, Caleb Johnson probably still walks in. But, I think it's and then we come back around, and I put this as a little bit of a note, too, that he kind of mentioned how the offensive line being better and having a higher floor than they've had before.
No question.
Is kind of anchoring this offense. As far as moving forward into Big Ten play, it really helps. It's an exponential thing, and it all starts on that line of scrimmage. And that's what we've talked a lot about the last couple of years on the show is, yes, the quarterback play hasn't been good, and the receivers aren't getting open, and all this stuff. But all of that is made easier when step one is completed. And step one is the offensive line. And you could argue that step one is actually the scheme and the tendencies before the ball's ever snapped.
Yeah.
That's been improved too. And I think anyone who thinks this isn't Tim Lester's offense is crazy. If you look at you just watch the plays that are happening. Even if they're the same sort of like we're running to the same spots on the line, the pre-snap motion, a lot of the action once the ball is snapped, there's a lot of decoy stuff that's happening. Like it is... KF, these are not KF plays. These are.
They're not pushing players horizontally off the line of scrimmage. They're pushing them back.
Yeah.
More so. There's been more of a focus on doing that rather than opening up a running hole, a running lane, right, for Caleb Johnson to go through. They're pushing the players back, and it's a completely new scheme. I mean, even going back to the toss play, I think that toss play has been a phenomenal addition with Caleb Johnson. I asked Logan Jones about it yesterday, and he just said there's something about that play that we just all get it. And they are all in such good rhythm right when the ball is snapped. They explode off the line of scrimmage, and they're one unit. It's not five or six different guys, right? They're one unit. And then you have Caleb Johnson, who
is also one unit.
I'll tell you what, man. Everybody better be really appreciating Caleb Johnson right now.
Yeah.
Because he could be entering money season right now, Tyler.
Yeah, well, and that's I think one of the biggest questions or one of the biggest, you know, if you're a hater right now in Iowa, you're thinking, okay, well, he's not going to be able to do it in Big Ten play, right? Like Iowa's offense generally is not going to be as good versus Big Ten opponents. Maybe a good opponent this upcoming week here as we enter the fight for Floyd on Saturday. Minnesota, I think, is fifth in total defense in the country right now. Now, they haven't played any sort of great. Yes. Iowa will be the best offense they've seen, which is to say something. Iowa is currently 53rd in the country in total offense. UNC, North Carolina, who Minnesota played in their first game, is the best offensive team they've played up until this point. They sit one spot behind Iowa at 54th in the country. They've played Rhode Island, and they've played
Nevada.
Nevada. Nevada's like 104th. Rhode Island isn't even a Division I football team. So you're not, you know, the defensive numbers may be a little skewed. Do I think that the non-conference will end up, you know, you break it into 3-9 games at the end of the season and the non-conference games will be slightly better statistically on the offensive side of the ball? Probably. I don't know if it'll be as big of a drop-off as we think. So I hope not. Is Caleb going to run for 170 a game in the Big Ten? Probably not.
I think he can get 135, 140.
But he's going to be
100. Minnesota's been a sloppy tackling football team, and Nebraska, as good as Nebraska's looked, they have been giving up 4.5 yards a carry. Caleb Johnson right now, I think, could run for 180 to 200 against Nebraska.
You and I kind of they put some drives together on Nebraska. I watched that game. It was interesting.
It's also worth noting, too, just as far as Caleb Johnson goes and his national accolades, I have not been able to find a Heisman odds on him. I did find the Doak Walker. He has the fourth best odds to win the Doak Walker Award right now.
Wow.
Plus 1,400. That Boise State guy is minus 110, but that's also because he's got 9 touchdowns already.
Yeah.
Dude's kind of a freak.
That's actually, that's insane. Also, on staying on the running attack here, we learned that LeSean is probably not going to be in the game. He got banged up. And Kamari took a little bit of a dinger last week as well. Got to see some of Jazz Patterson finally. We kind of speculated this could be a 3 running back room here. Then all of a sudden Jazz comes out and has like a really good fourth quarter, what you may call garbage time. But I don't know. Troy was still playing pretty hard and Iowa was trying to run the ball pretty hard. And Jazz maybe looked the most like Caleb of the other 3 running backs when he came in and ran. He was running hard, David. He was ready for those reps.
Yeah, he was. And I think he looked faster than I've ever seen him before, too. I mean,
he looked athletic, dude. He looked real lean and mean.
And, you know, I think he's a good fit for the system as well. You know, with all due respect to Caleb, this is not a slight against Caleb. Nobody hits an open lane harder and with more physicality than Jazz Patterson.
Oh,
Caleb's got a little bit of shiftiness. He's got the lower leg strength now where he's bouncing off wimpy tacklers. Patterson's looking to run over somebody. He's looking to stuff dude's face in the ground. He's getting after it. So I liked what I saw out of it. Look, tough break for LeSean. And, you know, I know KF and everybody said he was healthy. I still don't believe that LeSean was 100%, and maybe that's just my tinfoil hat theory. He just didn't have that same bounce as we saw last year, that same consistency. And, you know, missing that time in fall camp might have hindered him a little bit, without a doubt. But, you know, throwing Jazz in there, I liked it. And I think Caleb Johnson's come a long way as far as his pass blocking, third down blocking. I think Jazz Patterson's still the best running back pass blocker on the team. That dude just – He gets it. He did that one last year, I think. I wish I could remember what game it was. He took out the two different guys on one play.
I think it was Iowa State.
To a touchdown. I think it was Iowa State. I think you're right.
And I say all that. I bring it up to say I think we'll see more Jazz this week because the other two guys are banged up. And the way Caleb is running and the way that we're running him, 25 – well, he had 11 in the first game, but – he didn't.
That's been surprising how much they're really utilizing him as like that bell cow, that heavy duty back. Like, we have not seen Iowa do this in quite a long time.
Yeah. And I think he needs whatever we need to win football games. But if we're going to speak strictly health wise, like the best option to keep him healthy, I think it's better to keep him closer to 20 carries than it is 25. And I think that we can give those other 5 on average carries to Jazz. I think he could take that for sure, along with Kamari and LeSean when they're healthy. But I think you might see more Jazz Patterson this week. I hope we do, personally.
It'll be interesting to see what their strategy is, because keep in mind, Iowa's going into their first bye week as well. So maybe they're just like, you know what?
True.
Like, I'll be real, Tyler. I'm not trying to be overdramatic. Iowa has to win this game this week.
Oh, like, I know.
This is must win of an early season game as I can remember Iowa ever having.
Yeah.
Because if they lose this game, they go to Ohio State, you're starting likely to – I'm not counting Iowa out. Be smart about that.
No, but odds would say 2-3. Very likely
start 2-3, and with this team, that's without a doubt a major disappointment, especially when 2 of the losses are to arguably against their 2 biggest rivals.
Yeah. No, and I'm that's a really touchy subject that I'm like sort of hovering around. Mentioned it today. I mentioned it in yesterday's Patreon podcast. I will touch on it very, very briefly tonight, but for our Thursday episode preview, there could be some depression setting in the black and gold fan base here, but we're not, again, I'm not going to hang on that. Where do I want to go here? We talked about the running backs. An interesting comp to Ray Lewis from
that was weird. Kurt KF pulled some stuff out of the archives yesterday.
He did, was in dude.
Storyteller mode yesterday.
He blows my mind. I've talked about how his, first of all, you want to see somebody like, you know, politics going on right now. We're talking about like two 78-year-olds trying to run for president. Kirk is almost 70. This man is sharp. That is what mental sharpness looks like for someone in their seventh, eighth decade of life. And he was
master storyteller. I don't think KF gets enough credit for being an outstanding storyteller.
Master memory. He started the post-game press conference, and he had like a little slip of the tongue and said Arkansas State. He's like, oh, sorry, it felt like Arkansas State 15 years ago. We won 21-14. And I was like,
what?
I was like, hold on a second. You had the same feeling. You got a feeling from this game that took you 15 years back, and you just remembered the score. David, I can't remember last year. I don't even remember most of the plays or games from my career in detail, which was 7 to 10 years ago. He's bringing back stuff from like 1981, his first year in Baltimore. I'm like,
yeah,
what are we talking about right now? But it was just cool to kind of hear like a Ray Lewis comparison, because obviously Ray is like one of the all time greats, and KF doesn't throw comps around like lightly. So I would feel really, really good if I was Jay Higgins, and I really don't have any more commentary on that. I just thought it was a fun comparison.
Jay Higgins, such a dog, man. It's amazing the all-time greats like linebackers that come out of Iowa. Like it just seems like whoever steps in at Mike is going to be remembered as like an all-time. I mean, go back to Jack Campbell, Josie Jewell, Chad Greenway, and Jay Higgins is going to be near the top of the list for me. That dude just understands what it takes.
I think KF mentioned it too. He said, I believe he was quote unquote, good players tend to flock to other good players, and talking about how Jay, when he was younger, biding his time, waiting his turn behind Jack Campbell, there's this buy-in mentality that is when you come into this program and you're one of those guys who can be patient and disciplined, you just see the guys ahead of you that are successful as this, like, hey, that's the black book right there. If I just follow that playbook, I can be that guy. I just have to wait. And that's pretty much been the structure that we've had at middle linebacker and a lot of other positions, but at middle linebacker specifically for going all the way back to Chad Greenway. I mean, it's just been crazy.
Yeah. I mean, Tyler, I go back to what I started saying a few years ago. I think it was just before the Xavier Wampa class, but it's dudes recruit dudes. Dudes want to play alongside of dudes.
Yep.
And especially in that room, it's very easy to see. And I think it speaks volumes to all of the backup linebackers right now currently at Iowa
that
have been there and have been biding their time because they know they're going to have ample opportunity next year. I mean, I don't know if you heard this story, but go back to Jay and Harrell. That's a guy who's been training to be the Mike linebacker. Near bowl prep, he went along – he went to – KF, he went to Seth Wallace. And again, he at this point, we're thinking Nick Jackson is gone, right? To the NFL, he's not coming back. Jay and Harrell went up to Seth and went up to KF and said, hey, I see there's an opportunity here. We get Jay back another year. I'm thrilled about it. If you need me, I'm happy to switch over to a weak side linebacker and start learning that position so I can get on the field and be a difference maker.
Yep.
That's just a culture that has been set by Seth Wallace and in that linebacker room and all of the players that have gone through that. So, again, I think it speaks volumes to the fact that you have all these dudes that Seth and everybody has just flat out said, hey, we got guys that can play. We're just waiting for their opportunity. But you think next year, they're replacing legends. But if you think they're really worried about who's coming in next year,
not at all.
They know they got more. Ammo in the shed, man. They're ready to go.
I was just gonna say it's fun for us because you do look ahead to next year if you want to play that game and just take yourself out of the current season. And it's a little meek. You're like, oh my God, we're losing quite a bit here across the entire team. You play the odds, and just the way that it's gone for Iowa, there's likely one, maybe two All-American linebackers that are just sitting in the two deep right now, or the three deep. And they're just waiting. And they like, and I don't know who it is, but those are the odds. And it's just, it's very exciting, and I know that they'll have them ready. It does speak to Coach Wallace and sort of the mentality he brings to that room, which is why he needs to be the head coach, so he can bring that mentality continually to the whole team when KF is done, but I won't get onto that now.
Is this your official endorsement of whenever KF
calls? Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Okay. The walk-ons give the endorsement. Him or LaVar, doesn't matter. You're going to get a lot of the same stuff from both.
I thought I was going to bait you out of that. I thought I was going to get you to solo endorse Seth right there.
They're both going to be head coaches very soon. It's just a matter of time. Yeah. There was a lapse of memory on KF. Maybe he was just so pissed off that the guy scored three touchdowns on us. Huge game for that guy from Troy, by the way. He said he's never seen a guy score three touchdowns in a game. He said it multiple times. He said it in the post-game press conference and the Tuesday presser. And I was a part of one of those games. Max Williams from Minnesota, the tight end in 2014,
bent
us over. They were going, we got destroyed. It was like 51-14. It was like an overcast, drizzly day in Minnesota. And I was like, Coach, 2014,
Tyler,
Max Williams.
Here's what I think he was trying to say, though. I think it wasn't about the three touchdowns. It was about the fact that the guy scored three touchdowns and he was not touched on any of the touchdowns. Because if you go back, he goes like, yeah, like Devontae, he didn't say his name, but Devontae, the guy who scored three touchdowns, goes like, yeah, Devontae could have came on our sideline, had a cup of coffee, and then walked to the end zone. Yeah, that's the type of time. So he said, I don't remember ever watching a game where a guy scores three touchdowns and nobody just touches him at all. And even on that punt return, he said it was junior high coverage. There's 17 people on one side of the hash. Look at that replay. Now, granted, with all due respect to Reese is going to be good. That can never happen. That punt can never happen again.
Yeah, we broke that down for like 8 or 10 or too many minutes on our recap episode. And a lot of people were like, wow, thanks for the perspective on that. It's not often that Kevin and I get to give like a really very deep, like well thought out perspective on plays. But like a punt like that, we're obviously able to. And just put simply, the coverage net wasn't good. There was a couple of mistakes made that when you don't have enough hang time, you don't have enough time to get out of. And that's pretty much what happened. And bang, you get and the guy's having the day of his life too. So yeah, not great.
Hope they liked having him on the roster because he's going to be on a Power 4 roster.
He's gone.
He's absolutely gone.
He had his one game and now that's all the tape that Division 1 needs. Tough for them. Talking about the big plays, and we'll kind of finish here. A lot of questions about, hey, you've given up big plays. How do you mentally fix those mistakes? Are they correctable? You guys are known for not giving up big plays. KF said, if we're going to get beat, we need to make sure they're beating us. And when talking about the coming back or fixing those mental mistakes, he's talking about how the best teams at Iowa, and this is absolutely true, get better and don't let mistakes happen twice. Now, you could say that the big pass plays are the same mistake going back to the Iowa State game with Wampa. Those are three individual plays that have their own nuance to them. You also have Phil Parker at the top of that defense Coach Ferentz in the post-game press conference, I believe, air quoted, we're known for not giving up big plays. That is burning Coach Ferentz and Coach Parker right now. So I guarantee, just like we talked about, hey, the red zone was burning Coach Ferentz after that.
Just pissed him off.
And then they came up with something to fix that. The Brendan Sullivan package, a little bit more, a better approach down there. They're going to fix those big plays too. And when we do, we talked about it. You take those big plays out of this game, they had like 140 yards of total offense if they just take those two big plays out.
On a scale of 1 to 10, Tyler, I'm about a 3 worried about the big plays.
Yeah.
If that. I trust Phil Park. You're talking about the Broyles Award winner. Probably should have won it more than once. Let's just keep
absolutely.
It deserved it way too late. In my opinion, he got way too late. And on top of that, these are proven players. These are guys who have gotten it done on the highest level. It's not like they're replacing all these other players. Now, tough day for TJ Hall.
Yeah.
I like what TJ Hall brings to the table. I think he has potential to get things done. And, you know, I think player-led meetings are very important. Just coaches away. I go back to last year. I think it was entering that Penn State game when Joe Evans pulled the entire D-line room aside. Or it was after Penn State. Joe Evans, Logan Lee, I think, was the other guy. Got everybody together and said, guys, we got to get our shit together. Just for lack of a better term. That's what they said. I truly believe that Quinn Schulte and Jamari Harris are going to do something very similar in that secondary room.
Yeah.
And if you talk about a guy, Jamari Harris is now, you know, he's my breakout player entering the year, and I thought it was a little bit way too slept on. Jamari's looking like the next all Big Ten caliber cornerback right now.
Yeah.
Quinn Schulte's gotten it done. Xavier Wampa, I think this is a very critical week for him because I think Cohen Entringer's looked really good when he's been in there, and the dude is a ball player. But I think they're going to be able to get it done. And I think on top of that too, Tyler, I'm sure you and Kevin dove into it. The plays they've given up are fixable. It's not, and I think KF basically alluded to it the other day. You don't have a Marvin Harrison Jr. on the other, and most of the time on the other side.
Yeah, I think
you have good players.
In the press conference, they're like, there's no Plaxico Burress. That's just
Plaxico Burress
dominating you. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and I think that's the thing. It's communication issues, it's breakdowns and coverage. And you know, Phil's going to be on their ass about it. Just we know what Phil Parker brings to the table. We know Seth Wallace from a co-defense coordinator brings to the table. They are going to be all over them. And again, these guys have gotten it done. Now, if they give up some explosive plays against Minnesota, I may get a little bit worried because the only team that has potential the rest of the season to burn Iowa a couple times is Ohio State.
Yep.
And that's not a slight to Iowa. It's Ohio State is the best wide receiver room in the country, in my opinion. And they are loaded from top to bottom at every single position.
Yeah, I think it is a big week. It's a big week in about 10 or 12 different ways. I think the best part to end it here is what would give a listener or a fan out there that's listening to us talk about this any confidence that they're going to get right the ship. And I think KF gave us a great example of that. Since the first half of the Illinois State game, if you take away the delay of game penalty that they took on purpose there, kind of it was not super important. Well, it was a little bit important, but
you take
that away. They've had 9 penalties this season. 6 of those were in the first half against Illinois State.
Yeah,
five or six. A very first game kind of cobweb kind of thing. They've had 3 penalties essentially in 5.
Didn't have any against Troy.
0 in the entire game. So that's one of those things right there. Penalties, which are very much so mental errors, communication stuff, kind of first quarter, first 3 games of the season kind of thing that they've already shown. Wow, we've already seen marked improvement in making sure we don't let these things happen. And I think that's a good indicator for how those big plays could not show up as time goes on in this season. So
the preseason strength of the team has become the weakness, and what we thought was the weakness, the defensive line depth and, you know, the edge rusher capabilities, that's become a strength. And I think that's been very under talked about. They've been really, really good in rush defense. They've been getting after the quarterback. I think they're 16th in the country in sacks. Max Llewellyn, Ethan Hurkett's been phenomenal. YA Black, like
Brian Allen.
Have some guys. Brian Allen's going to be a dude, man.
He's already a dude, but he's going to be a dude statistically.
So I think if there's any comfort from that standpoint, it's kind of flipped from what we thought in the preseason, and that tells me they're going to get things fixed.
Yep, I agree. And when you do all this analysis and you're a fan and you're trying to figure out how to figure out this team and like what you should expect as you watch your favorite team, I think it's also a thing of like, there's always going to be something that we're not happy with. There's always going to be something that could be better. So that it just is the way it is. So
yep.
Awesome. Love it. Hit every fucking bullet I had. Another great week with David Eichholt on the KF Press Review Show. Thank you guys for listening. We'll be back tomorrow with the main episode previewing Minnesota Awards winners. I think we got a couple fan questions from the Patreon. 5-10-5 show on Friday and then Fight for Floyd on Saturday. We'll talk to you guys at those times. See you then. Hey, thanks for listening to the show. If you want more, you can check us out on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube by searching Washed Up Walk-Ons. And if you're interested in supporting the show, head over to patreon.com/washedupwalkons where you can find bonus podcasts, merchandise, and other cool perks. Best part, half of your subscription benefits the kids at UI Children's Hospital. We'll see you next time. Hawks by a million.